down in the North Bay Area. It's like off of Dock Street in Hudson. They have a really, really interesting history.
How long have they been there?
At least since the late 1800s. And there was kind of like a Hudson River tradition of these shanty towns. There used to be shanty towns all up and down the Hudson River. There was a collection of shanties just like south of Hudson. There was a shanty town in Poughkeepsie. It was just kind of what was done back in the day.
Because
And
people could set up next to the river and immediately get food
I
go
mean, they're
fishing and stuff.
Essentially like fishermen shacks. At times people permanently called them their abodes, but they're mostly kind of like little vacation shanties, I guess.
Yeah, kind of the river equivalent of a hunting shack.
Yeah, exactly. And just for like kind of recreation and good times down there. The biggest thing that were done down by Shantytown was netting shad, which you can't do anymore. The it's shad is a it's a fish. I forgot the term, and drummer. But anyway, they're a fish that primarily lives in the sea, but they, like salmon, go up the Hudson River to spawn. They were commercially fished quite a bit, and you're not legally allowed to commercially fish them since 2010. And I'm not blaming the Fergari shacks on that. They were, you know.
That's low population of the fish is why they're trying to bring back
Yeah, they're trying to bring back the shad populations, and like the state has this initiative to try to bring them back to 1980s levels. But I mean, because like back in the day, there would just be these huge commercial trawlers just like scooping up everything in the Hudson, and that caused the shad populations to drop. So that's kind of like shanty town. In Hudson, shanty town was inhabited until 2012. Yeah, 2012. In 2012, there was a SWAT raid by the City of Hudson Police, and they cleared everyone out. They had a complete legal, it was completely legal to do this because the land that the Fergari shacks were on, like nobody who lived in the shacks owned the land. It was originally state land, but in 2010 there was a land swap
I
between the
guess
city and the
originally it
state.
was probably indigenous land,
Oh yeah, originally, yeah. I can only go back so far,
right?
but more recently, until 2010, it was state land, and then it was city land. And the city, this was, I believe Mayor Hallenbeck, at the time, he ordered, the police raid to clear everyone out. I mean, they tried softer methods of getting everyone out, but one of the people that lived or, had a shack down there, like threatened to like shoot anyone who, tried to clear them out. So they used the cops, and it was very controversial, and it was like a big thing. But that was a bit ago. Since 2012, essentially, the shanties have fallen into like crazy disrepair. I mean, no one has been down there fixing them up, and they're right by the river, so they'll flood a little and that kind of thing. So what you see right now is just kind of what remains. Like some of the shanties are kind of collapsing into the river. If you, there's historical pictures. They have a lot of them at the Hudson Library, and Leo Bauer, a Hudson resident who's kind of the unofficial caretaker of Shantytown, has like this great historical collection. But like it was like this little village down by the river. But fast forward to the present day, or 2017 anyway, there was a state grant that Hudson won.
The
And
Downtown Revitalization Initiative,
Initiative, DRI grant, and it was for $10 million. And long story short, there was four projects ultimately selected, where with the collaboration between the state and the city about where the money would go. And the smallest chunk of money went to the Fergari shacks to knock some of them down, but also preserve some of them and create kind of like a historical site. So that was 2017, 2018. That obviously has not happened yet. And a lot of people were surprised when last Tuesday the city DPW just started kind of knocking a few of the shacks down. A lot of people were upset. I got a call about it and looked into it. Essentially, what the city is saying is there's not enough money to preserve the shacks at the moment. Mayor Kamal Johnson said that he very much hoped to save one or two of the shanties, but, you know, there's not the money to do that. $150,000 was slated for the whole Fergari Shack project. Just knocking down the shacks and some basic environmental remediation, because there was lead and asbestos used in the construction of the shanties, that takes $130,000 in today's dollars, leaving only $20,000 left. And that's not enough money, I'm being told, to rehabilitate any of the shanties or create like a historical site.
So did the mayor or someone in the administration have a math error 4 years ago, or is it the inflation that is the problem here?
Part of it is inflation, yeah. Part of it is just that construction costs have gone up so high.
Everybody knows about that.
Yeah, yeah, that's like a big thing. And part of it's a bit of a mystery, because like they would have needed so much more money to do what was originally supposed to be done. And, you know, the state is aware of this. The city's not, like, going behind the state's back and knocking down all of these shanties. And I talked to the state, and they also want one or two of the shanties to be preserved. But, you know, shoulders shrugged as to how this could be done. But there's also the component that if you look back at the original DRI, like the final DRI, the city was, the $150,000 was never supposed to do the entire project. Like it says in the documents, is like, all right, $150,000 is being slotted for this whole rehabilitation thing, but then the city is going to have to find an additional $40,000 to, you know, go the final 10 yards, you know.
Which is typical of grants.
Yeah, and especially with the DRI grants, and especially, like, you know, most grants, the municipality is, like, given a chunk of money, and then they're expected to use that money to attract further funding, and then you have a project. So I'm not sure the amount of effort or time that has been put into, you know, in an attempt to find the additional money, but, you know,
they may have tried and failed, or they may not have tried. It's a mystery.
Yeah. And it also, like, to be fair, this has gone over the course of three mayoral administrations. So, I mean, like, I don't know if you can, like, point the finger at anyone in particular, but the additional money has not been gotten. And, like, also because of inflation and all that, it's not that they would have just had to find an additional $40,000. They would have had to find more than that. So that's a component, too.
It seems like there would have been some historic preservation grant available somewhere or something. Or it also seems like, because this was these shacks along the Hudson River, you know, were not just in Hudson, that somewhere along the Hudson River there should be some sort of remembrance of this history of the Hudson Valley.
There really should. I very much agree. Because, like, yeah, I mean, it's the last shanty town that exists up and down the Hudson. And, like, there was, like, numerous shanty towns around Hudson. There was the current one, the Fergari Shacks, then there was one south of the city, and then there was a ton on Hudson Middle Isle Flats, that, you know, island in between Athens and Hudson. Some of them have been rebuilt, but all of them, there was, like, a bunch, and they all got burnt down in the 1980s. It's a bit of a mystery who did it. There's various theories, but a couple have been rebuilt. If you kayak around it, you're like, huh, a house. I don't know if that's supposed to be there. But, you know, it would be a very nice thing to preserve. And, you know, it should also be said that it's not like that land can be used for much else.
I was going to ask, it was a downtown revitalization grant. So the implication is that they're trying to revitalize the public's use of the waterfront, right?
Yeah.
So are they going to – there's no plan to do something different there or something
– Not
after they take the shacks down, it's just going to be waterfront?
Well, not with the DRI money, no. I mean, just like most of it is just going down to take down the shacks. And I don't know – I mean, you know, you can't put like an apartment complex there or anything because it's swampy. It's just like it wouldn't work. But, you know, people want to turn it into like a public park with a couple of preserved shanties, like some historic markers and everything.
Which would seem to fit in with downtown revitalization.
Yeah, because it'd be revitalizing something. This is just kind of taking something away.
The end result here does not seem revitalizing.
No, it's kind of the opposite.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, but there's also there was attempts and they were not successful to get it designated as like a historic site by the state. That has not worked out yet, or it has not worked out, and like that would be a way of getting additional funding, but that has not happened.
And I'm guessing, I mean, and this is just a guess, I have no evidence, but it seems like it's probably a low priority in local government. You know, they have potholes to fill, they have budget shortfalls to take care of. There's seems like there's more pressing issues, which is maybe why they haven't been chasing down the additional funds they need to
it's
successfully chased down.
Yeah, it's not like making the trains run on time things, but yeah, there's like a ton of issues in Hudson. Like it would be nice to get some new water mains, for instance. And you know, there's an affordable housing crisis, which is like a whole thing. And I mean, I feel that
keeping the shacks is not going to help the affordable housing crisis.
No, you can't officially live there. They're not officially habitable. But I feel like if this issue happened in, like, 2005, like, Hudson would be up in arms. But the majority of people who...
And Hudson was kind of up in arms when the SWAT raid happened in 2012,
very,
right?
Very controversial. But I think, you know, there's been a large population turnover since then. And, you know, a lot of the people that were... you know, own shacks have either passed away or have moved elsewhere. And even you know, there's less people who like care about the issue in Hudson than once did. So what would have perhaps been like a major issue 20 years ago is not as major an issue now, not as high a priority.
All right. What other stories have you been working on this week?
Well, a documentary shot in Hudson called Hudson America. I saw it. It's really good. But it's about some Bangladeshi youth in Hudson. It's a documentary, and it follows them over the course of, I think, 6 years, like through high school and college. It's... you know, to be kind of like abstract, it's kind of about like immigrant communities in the U.S. And, you know, the subjects were Muslim and this was like during the Trump years. So it brings in these bigger issues, but it's just like really about the youth's kind of characters and their struggles. And it really like dives into them. Like the filmmakers, you know, I mean, it took 6 years to shoot. They got to know the subjects really, really well. So they're really intimate portraits. And it had some screenings in, like, festivals in Europe and the U.S. and also in Hudson, which, of course, is in the U.S., but I have to mention that specifically.
I think TSL played it a bunch last year or the year before.
Yeah, it had a run at TSL, and it was picked up by Amazon this week, so you can catch it on Amazon's streaming service. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. It's putting us on the map a little. You know, people should see it. It's a very interesting portrait of kind of a segment of Hudson that some people have like trouble breaking into.
And it's also like kind of underreported. It's kind of an insular community. The Bangladeshis. They don't.
Yeah.
You don't read about them in the newspaper. You don't. We had a radio show when we started this station, but we don't have a radio show from the Bangladeshi community anymore. people don't even realize there's a Bangladeshi community here, unless I guess you walk down to the waterfront in the evenings, you can see Muslim people walking around.
Yeah, because the majority of them live like, you know, Columbia Street and like kind of like that area. But yeah, no, the filmmakers, one of whom lives in Columbia County, she's originally from Prague. The other one, Jeffrey Hug, kind of collaborated with her. I mean, it's both their project. He just doesn't live in Columbia County. But they like very broke in. And it was like funny because, you know, all the kids were like 16 when the filming started. So some of my major questions to them is like, you needed parental permission. Like, how did that go? And they were like, well, we were able to break in. But it's a really good movie. whether you kind of live in Hudson or don't, you don't have to know anything about Hudson really to enjoy the movie. But it's like extra cool just to see all these characters that you know from around town. Like Linda Musselman, for instance, is in it a lot. So yeah, you can catch it on Amazon and,
I can't remember the name of, it's the, library service. It's,
yeah,
it starts with a C or a K.
It's
like Crackle,
K.
Crackle or something like that.
That's
I can't remember.
Crackle, it's Crimple.
Something like, if you have a library card, you have access to this service, and it's, the movie is available, free through that service. If you don't have a Amazon Prime account, I guess.
Yeah. Also through like university libraries. So yeah, public or university libraries. You can access the film.
And it's called Hudson USA. Is that what you?
Hudson America.
Hudson America.
Yes.
That's close.
Comma between the two.
Yes. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Roger Hannigan Gilson from the Times Union about the stories he's been reporting on this week. I guess you have something about to come out.
Yes, I can't really preview it, but I don't know, just check out timesunion.com later today. It should be a good story.
And anything else you can talk about in the coming week? Or?
Well, you know, just a few things I'm continuing to pursue. With the Wyndham story, the Wyndham Mountain Club, I'm going to be attending a couple of meetings coming up. Essentially, like the planning board in Wyndham has to decide whether they're going to give like a very thorough review or a light review to part of the project. That part of the project being townhouses and single family homes that they're planning to build on Wyndham. And this is very important because if they give it a thorough review, I mean, these things can take a long time, like a year plus. And that would kind of throw a wrench in the entire overall plan because there's just so many components and they have to kind of happen sequentially. So I'm sure Wyndham is hoping they're only ordered to give a light review.
And I think I saw the original proposal had one like extra hotel or something that they backed off.
They did back off the hotel, yeah. They have. But you know, the plan is not entirely finalized. But they were planning on putting a hotel. I don't know how to describe exactly on Wyndham it was, but it's near one of the parking lots, and they're backing off that. And you know, there's tweaks on what they proposed a few months ago, and you know,
again,
it's
that's not atypical in planning board process.
No,
that you come first with the vague proposal and it gets more specific.
It's definitely a process, and I'm sure Wyndham is hoping it's not a very long process
because they want to break ground this summer, right? Or spring.
They want to get things going because they sold all these passes. They're in the process of selling these very expensive, not passes, but club memberships, $175,000. And
then they have successfully sold some of them? Because it just seems like crazy that anyone would buy one.
That's actually an assumption on my part. I do not know. I
didn't think
they've sold at least one. They're trying to sell a few hundred.
They're not telling. They're not putting out the number.
No.
There's not a countdown on their website that says number
only
six.
Only four left to get our economic goal. Yeah. But, you know.
But they want $175,000 to have access to the entire Wyndham Mountain Club.
Yeah.
And the public can only buy day passes to certain things, and they're not, and they have to buy 2 day passes instead of 1 day pass now, right?
Well,
on Saturday, I guess.
Well, on Saturday, yeah, they can only buy 2 day passes to ski on Saturday. So if you want to ski on a Saturday, you have to buy like a Saturday Sunday pass or a Friday Saturday pass. But if you want to ski on like a Wednesday, you just need a 1 day pass. But that's this year, and who knows exactly what the case is going to be next skiing season.
And yeah, they may change these some of these policies if they don't sell enough the giant $175,000 packages. Or
yeah, I mean, it seems they're pretty committed to this plan, though. You know, they're going full bore ahead.
And the opposition in the town still seems to be going full bore ahead too.
yeah, which is, you know, why the planning board is important. Like, are those planning board members opposed to the project in general? Are they not? What will they try to gum things up? And you know, gum things up sounds illegitimate, but you know, it's what the effect would have on Wyndham's overall project if they ordered this like thorough review. And like, you know, I've covered a lot of planning boards, and like certain projects can be in planning boards and for a long time. Like in Hudson, the Hall Road situation, that's like a decade or something. That was crazy.
And of course, Wyndham is sort of a company town, so the mountain is the largest employer, sure, by far.
Oh,
in
way far, yeah.
In the town of Wyndham, right?
Yeah. And you know, Wyndham is arguing, and you know, it's there's going to be more jobs, at least initially. I mean, there's construction jobs, which are temporary, and will those construction jobs come from the community, or will they bring people in? Not because they're trying to undermine anything, just because like there may or may not be like 100 or like X number of construction workers who already live in Wyndham. There almost definitely isn't, because there's like 3,000 people in Wyndham, and I don't think like 100 of them are just construction workers sitting around waiting for a giant project in their town.
No, typically the large projects here get go to Albany corporations or Dutchess County or Ulster, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, it's less about, like, who's the project lead than, like, who the employees are. But, you know, it's a sparsely populated area, so they most likely would have to bring, like, some people in for the construction, yeah.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Roger Henneken-Gilson from the Times Union. I guess we'll probably be speaking about this Wyndham issue over and over and over again, right?
Yeah.
So perhaps next week we'll hear more on this subject or other subjects.
Yes.
That was Toon Yards covering the Breeders' Cannonball. 4AD, the label 4AD, has put out a compilation of for their anniversary of bands covering 4AD songs. That was a classic 4AD song from the 90s from the Breeders. And now here's another cover. This is a 2021 cover from Chris Forsythe and the Solar Motel Band doing Neil Young's Barstool Blues.